Ιωνή, τα Λοβανή, τα Λοφαλάβα, μάλλον στο εφού μαλελάνια μαμά, και οράνα, μάλλον ελελέη, φακαλό φαλαγιά του, τα Λόφα, κόκκου με λεμελεπούκα, με αγμά η τεάμα, εμό μου λάβα βιγκή, πέτε τα τότε μάνα η τελάνη μου τα ναταουρίνα, μάνα όκμα νουιάνα, μου κοιτά το ούμα, το ούμα. Τότε όλα μα τα μάλλον έχουν μόνο κοιτά το, ο κατσίνο είναι τα ρούτα μου, είναι βενέ. Once again, warm Pacific greetings to all our listeners. You are tuned in and listening to Gamma Radio on Planet FM 104.6 or live streaming online at www.planetaudio.org.nz. Or if you missed the broadcast, listen for the next 7 days at www.planetaudio.org.nz/Gamma Pacific House.
Talufalava Malo Elele. And of course, again, here we are, except this morning I'm sitting in the studio looking out the window. There's no sun shining, but it's quite warm. But I can see the leaves of the tree outside the window are kind of moving. But yeah, it's rather a bit cool and warm at the same time. And first of all, we praise God for waking us up this morning. As we all know, there are a lot of people didn't wake up this morning. And tonight will be somebody's last good night. And it is an honor and a privilege to be able to have with us our very, very special guest this morning, Manu Futu, Suicide Prevention Program Manager for both Waitemata and Auckland District Health Boards. And of course, before we continue on, we must always welcome the presence of our Father in Heaven, and we're going to open our program with a word of prayer.
Heavenly Father, thank you, Lord, for this opportunity that we can come on air and share information with our community. Ask for your spirit, Lord, to continue to lead us in our program. Give us wisdom so that we can talk about what it might be well and good for our community, Lord. In your mighty name. Amen.
Amen. Well, welcome back again. And our track is not actually working this morning, but that's fine. We'll continue on. On behalf of Te Ama, we welcome our beautiful listeners this morning, our audience out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our program. And also on behalf of Te Ama, we now give a special warm welcome to our very special guest, Manu Futu, joining us in the studio right now. So, Manu Elele and Talu Falaba, welcome Manu. As you all know, for the sake of our listeners, Manu is actually a pioneer of this radio program, Te Ama, which is born from the program that we used to run here. It's called Like Minds, Like Mind. So it is an honor and a privilege to welcome you again. Malo elele, Manu.
Malo elele, Fale, Malo etauma, we, ai, pongpongini, koutomua, hufanga penga, I forgot tapu, fa, faxet me fale ni. Thank you very much, Fale, for the warm welcome. It is right that going back a few years now in terms of how we have started the program at Wakatau Tua with regards to Like Minds, which was a... As some of our listeners are aware of, that's a program funded by the government to address stigma and discriminations of our loved ones and those who suffering from mental health issues. So, you know, some of those programs are still going strong, and some of the providers are providing support for our community. But you're right, it's going back to those days. But it's always a privilege to come back and talk about what the issues in health and social issues that we face, our community are facing at the moment, the challenges and all of those things. I'm always happy to come back to talk to you more about those.
Thank you, Manu. Yes, and we count on you in updating our community and the public with regards to statistics and also the programs that you are running with the suicide prevention program in our community. But before we do that, for the sake of our listeners, Manu, I noticed that you're still enjoying playing rugby league and participating in other outdoor activities. So that's the secret for you to looking so young and active. And in saying that, I also noticed that with your children and your beautiful wife, Jennifer, and you have five children, three boys and two girls. And so you're all into sports that I noticed. Isaac, which is 24 now, and I remembered when he was just that boy, school here, high school, and now where is he?
Yes. Well, it's time goes so quick, and kids nowadays they grow up so fast. Isaac is playing professionally in Germany right now. It's his second year there. He played 3 years in Spain, and now he's in Germany. He's enjoying the life over there. And you mentioned that I still play running out, playing rugby league, playing with them, what we call the masters. You know, it's the older folks still wanting to run. You know, the mind is willing, but sometimes the body is not so willing, and always sore afterwards. But the sports features quite highly in our families.
Yes.
And one thing that I always glad that they do take up sports, as we some of our parents know that. Involving in sports, they can learn a whole lot of life skills and other things that will prepare them as they grow up and as part of their development, other than being, you know, physically healthy, but also there are other stuff that there will be benefit for them. So I was glad that they all played sports, and particularly basketball. I was wishing that one of the boys will play rugby, but it turned out that they all play basketball. They all started up with playing rugby. And the girls, they play netball and other kind of sports. One girl is doing well in tag, and the other girl, Ella, is playing basketball. Zin is quite good at playing rugby and the physical stuff, and also tag rugby. So they're all involved in sports one way or another. And there are opportunities, of course, in sports. I'm very fortunate that three of the kids are enjoying having scholarships. They go through the scholarship system in America, and that's how they get their education paid for. But also, at the end of it, some can make professional and make some living out of it. Mm-hmm. Like Isaac has done. Daniel is just starting a scholarship in San Francisco with St. Mary's College, which he's looking forward to. He's starting this year, so that's another one who's going down that path. And my youngest, Jacob, he's 14. Going quite that far. Thank you very much, Fale, for the warm welcome. It is right. A few years now in terms of how we have started the program at Wakatau Tua with regards to like minds, which was as some of our listeners are aware of, it's a program funded by the government to address stigma and discriminations of our loved ones and those who are suffering from mental health issues. So, some of those programs are still going strong, and some of the providers are providing support for our community. But you're right, it's going back to those days. But it's always a privilege to to come back, Fale, and talk about what the issues in health and social issues that we face, our community are facing at the moment, the challenges and all of those things. Always happy to come back to talk to you more about those.
Thank you, Manu. Yes, and we count on you in updating our community and the public with regards to statistics and also the programs that you're running with the suicide prevention program in our community. But before we do that, for the sake of our listeners, Manu, I noticed that you're still enjoying playing rugby league and participating in other outdoor activities. So that's the secret for you to looking so young and active. And in saying that, I also noticed that with your children and your beautiful wife, Jennifer, and you have 5 children, 3 boys and 2 girls. And so you're all into sports that I noticed. Isaac, which is 24 now, and I remembered when he was just that boy, school here, high school, and now where is he?
Yes. Well, it's time goes so quick, and kids nowadays they grow up so fast. Isaac is playing professionally in Germany right now. It's his second year there. He played 3 years in Spain, and now he's in Germany. He's enjoying the life over there. And you mentioned that I still play, running out, playing rugby league, playing with what we call the masters. You know, it's the older folks still wanting to run. You know, the mind is willing, but sometimes the body is not so willing, and always so afterwards. But the the sports fit is quite highly in our families.
Yes.
And one thing that I always glad that they do take up sports, as we some of our parents know that. Involving in sports, they can learn a whole lot of life skills and other things that will prepare them as they grow up in this part of their development, other than being, you know, physically healthy, but also there are other stuff that there will be benefit for them. So I was glad that they all played sports, and in particular basketball. I was wishing that one of the boys will play rugby, but it turned out that they all play basketball. They all started up with playing rugby. And the girls, they play netball and other kind of sports. One girl is doing well in tag, and the other girl, Ella, is playing basketball. Zane is quite good at playing rugby and the physical stuff, and also tag rugby. So they're all involved in sports one way or another. And there are opportunities, of course, in sports. Very fortunate that 3 of the kids are enjoying having scholarships. And they go through the scholarship system in America, and that's how they get their education paid for. But also, at the end of it, some can make professional and make some living out of it. Mm-hmm. Like Isaac has done. Daniel is just starting a scholarship in San Francisco with St. Mary's College, which he's looking forward to. He's starting this year, so that's another one who's going down that path. And my youngest, Jacob, he's 14. Again, he'll probably go through the same pathway as well, with looking at his siblings. The youngest always the lively one and out of the lot. So they're all involved in sports in one way or another.
Yes. So this is the food to sports side, right?
Yes. Well, my wife always says, well, it's their personalities from my side. which is true. I mean, they inherit a combination of what from my wife and myself, the Tongan and the English part that mix and come out a beautiful chocolate cake.
Right. The favorite one. So we spoke earlier on, and you mentioned sacrificing time, to be with the children, and it's very true. We can see it with the children. And you also say that you were able to go around on a cruise with the whole family, and which Isaac, 24, was able to contribute. That's amazing. Just by listening to you sacrificing time, you know, with the children and now.
Yes, it's important, Fale. I mean, that, especially we're living abroad in an environment which is very busy. Challenging that come to families, you know, we have to work, you know, even two jobs. We're still doing that. We used to do that in our parents when they came. So we, you know, the challenges for families is still there, to remain as a unit and be strong. You know, it's pretty hard to have one parents stay at home and look after the kids, which is something that we decided when our eldest was born, that someone would stay at home and look after the kids. And we look back at those times, it was a great investment, because you know, the long-term benefit will outweigh the short-term kind of a pain and struggle that we do by just looking at how the kids are developed. So, you know, we'll encourage the families to do that, but I also know the challenges that will come, the financial pressure, you know, that we encounter, our families here in New Zealand and abroad, you know.
Yes, for those of you that actually know Manu, he walks the talk because he's managed to look at the way that his children are into sports, and he's still looking fit, and he is still playing rugby. So, yeah, that's a good thing to know, that walk the talk is quite a, you know, it's a must. Otherwise, he was born in Tonga, but immigrated to join his family here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. He's also attended the University of Otago, where he graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree, majoring in biochemistry and microbiology. Then he moved to England for 10 years. And so I'm going to ask him now to speak to that before we actually listen to his updated report about this suicide prevention program. So Manu, you were living overseas for 10 years.
Yes, and I think in the early days, from a biblical point of view, I think just like, you know, Jacob, was it Jacob or Isaac, that have to spend 7 years for his wife? And I think, it was similar for me. I have to go and work 7 years for my wife over in England. But they extended 3 more years. I was so full of energy. I said, I'll stay for another 3 years. And so, the 10 years over there, and something that I share with my kids as well is saying, you know, it's only called the God that planned things for you. How can I go all the way to England and find a wife from there to bring to New Zealand? And then I look at it that way. It was a great experience living. 3 of the kids were born in England, of course, and worked there. It was a huge cultural shock for me, coming from Tonga to New Zealand and then from New Zealand to England. But nevertheless, there was a whole lot of learning and experiences that we get from there. You can look back and said, well, that has been part of my journey and our family's journey to date, and all the things that we experienced in England has, you know, contributed to who we are as a family, I think.
Right now, would you like to shout out to your beautiful wife, Jennifer?
Yes, I said to Jen, Jenny and Ella, I said, they're listening in. I'm just going to the studio. And also my brother, Tom, in Sydney, and his family. They are, you know, just, you know, a shout out for them. They're going to watch Daniel's team, St. Mary's, are playing in Sydney against the Illawarra Hawks tonight. So Tom will take some supporters to support him. And the coach, I think the coach wanted Tom to bring some cover, because we introduced a cover to the team when we were in Christchurch a wee while ago, and they loved the stuff, so they're wanting some more. So a shout out for Tom and Dawa and the kids in Australia.
Well done. And also, Manu has worked in the mental health sector as a clinician for 10 years before taking up a role as general manager for Waikato Tours. So Manu and I are sitting here. He's actually been there for 8 years. And he was actually my manager when I was with Waikato Tour. And I was very blessed having 6 years with Manu as my manager. And we're still working together at this time in presenting this program, Suicide Prevention Program Manager. And so here we are, Manu. I'll give it over to you now. And I am so blessed, and thank you also for being my manager for 6 years with the Like Minds, Like Minded Waikato Tour. Welcome again.
Yeah, thank you, Fale. And I know that the development of Waikato Tour at the time, because Waikato Tour is a combination of two organizations that came together, the Malo Longa Trust, which I manage at the time, and also you know, BIAS, which is the Pacific Information and Disability and Information.
Yeah.
And they combined to form Waikato Tour, which is a good move at the time. Dr. Sally Foliaki was the chairperson of BIAS, and Biliami from Malolonga. And so we had some good managers that come through. You know, Phil Bilby started off as a CEO. And then we have Carmel Cipollone, which is in Parliament now. You know, who's one of, they come through Waikato Tour. And now Mark Koshe is, Bui Mark Koshe is the CEO currently, who is the current chairman, just appointed chairman of County Manukau.
That's right.
So there's a lot of the pathway for leadership come through with, and I guess there's one thing for us from the Pacific, Fale, is, you know, the people that you look to during your journey, that they have become mentors for you as well. And we learn a whole lot from them. And as we get to that positions where we manage stuff, we have learned and during our journey from all these people that have forged a way for us. And that's the way I see my journey from Waikato to right now, sitting with the funding and planning team for mental health and addictions in Waitemata and Auckland DHB. And then, you know, as you mentioned, my focus is on suicide prevention program for the two DHBs, which is a challenge on its own. As we move on to my role, for our listeners some of our listeners will be aware of how the suicide prevention strategy has been in place. There was a 10-year strategy, which was 2006 to 2016, which that strategy is expired, and they have some of our listeners might remember that last year we had a new strategy that came out for consultations, another 10-year. Came out for consultations, and the Ministry of Health still yet to sign off on that 10-year. The old strategy, as I mentioned, there were two action plans. The latest was 2013-2016, which when I started 3 years ago on my role, there was the action plan that we based align our district health plan to it. And so there was our plan for Waitemata and Auckland was 2015-17. Mm-hmm. So our plan is expired, which I will talk more a little bit about current activities that we are involved with, working in collaboration with other organizations. But on a kind of a nutshell, that's where from a strategy, that's where the plan is at the moment with regards to the ministry. giving us directions on how we provide programs in suicide prevention. But obviously there are other mechanisms that, you know, community groups and other NGOs that we work with who are in that space. Mm-hmm. Some are training and some are providing support. So I'll talk a little bit more to it, but I think it's important to put a, I know, you know, a lot of times when I talk about suicide preventions, I don't want to dwell too much on the statistics, but I think it's important to take a snapshot of statistics, because usually that's what informs us on where we concentrate our programs at, when the data tells us that. So in terms of the statistics, Fale, and the data, we have two sources. There's a number of sources where we can collect suspected suicide or people who were lost to suicide. Before I go on, it's more important than some of the language what I remember. How, what to use, you know, people talk about committed suicide. So committed suicide usually means that, you know, that usually applies to somebody doing something wrong, committed a crime. And I think that historically there was a term that was used because suicide was illegal at the time. In the past, it was illegal to take your own life, which is still applicable in some of the islands. I know Tonga is one of the islands who still is against the law to take your own lives. And I think, again, it's based on maybe, you know, biblical influence, you know, how Christianity come to our islands and influence some of our laws. That was one of it. So committed suicide is, we try not to use committed because nobody is doing something wrong. The underlying problem, of course, of people taking their own lives is the reason. The other one is completed suicide. Completed, which means that it was something you always strive for and now you're completed. So some of the languages, I think, need to be aware of how the historical way we use it, because that's important into when it comes to training of people to look out for people who are in a space where they might take their own lives. So there's a, just for the language, but coming back to the statistics, the sources we get our data from mainly is from the Ministry of Health, where they release the data every year, an official data, but they are 3 years lagging. So for the latest that was officially released from the Ministry of Health will be dated back to the year 2015. So there's 3 years lagging of data is not up to date. The reason being is that the coroner's released another source of data. They released every year, provisionally, every around about August or September, they released a suspected suicide. They call it suspected suicide because there are some cases within the coroner the system that they need to investigate before they confirm or otherwise whether it is a suicide. So that's the difference. And sometimes when the ministry releases their figures, they might be a bit lower than what the coroners will release. So we're waiting for the release of the data from July of 2017 to June of 2018, and that usually comes out in August or September. And as when we look at the data, it's always, it's never been hardly below 500 people died nationally every year. So, for example, when we look at 2016-17 from the coroner's data, was the highest for a while, 606 people. And last year, from 15-16, was 579. And the previous year was 564, 2014-2015. So you're looking at the number is increasing all the time. In the last 10 years, we haven't cracked it under 500. Now, if you compare that to the people who died on a road accident, 15 or 20 years ago, it was over 700 people. And over time, right now, it's below 300. So, you know, we make a fuss when we have a increase in our road death.
Yeah.
So what has worked for the road accident and people died on the road? It's because there was a multiple of interventions, you know, things like improving the safety on the road, the speed limit, the drink driving. So there's a whole lot of things that was done to reduce the death rate down to below 300. So that's, you know, the question is, you know, what can we do in a similar fashion to reduce our suicide, people who we lost to suicide, which we haven't really make any dent below 500. 500 to 600 people every year, you know, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Then when we, you know, look at our Pacifican people who died from suicide, I'm just looking at the for our own region, but we're looking at the nationally Pacific from the record started in 2007-2008 in terms of our coroner's report, and we looked, there was 24 dead a year. The following year was 26, 31, 22. We're talking in the last 10 years. We are averaging about 30 people nationally died from our Pacific area. When we drill it down for the last 3 years, I just had a quick look at our, just for Waitemata in Auckland. I don't have anything for County Manukau, where a lot of our people live.
Right.
In 2016, we had 3 people in Waitemata. 2017 was 3 people in Waitemata.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, luckily, we haven't got anybody who lost to suicide 2018 so far. In ADHP, with 2016, we had 1. 2017, we had 7 people died to suspected suicide. In 2018, we have 1. So what the data is telling us that male is still high in ratio in comparison to females, nearly 3-1. The highest rate of suicide among ethnicity is Maori. Maori is still features high in our statistics. Theirs is about 21 deaths per 100,000. So the rate is 21, in opposed to the rest of the population is around about 12, between 11 to 12. So that's quite high for Maori. So what it's telling us is that, you know, for so long, Maori is still represented highly in our statistics. You know, Asians, for 1 year, it's going up. And that's the nature of numbers of our suicide and the rate. It goes up and down each year. But when you look in the average for the last 10 years, we haven't really make a huge inroad in terms of reducing the rate. And of course, we always hear the news about our young people.
Mm.
We have one of the highest rate of suicide in our young people within the OECD country. I think we are second. And so that's another concern for us in terms of our statistics for our young people.
Mm.
And there's something that I just want to highlight, the statistics. Finally, I don't want to dwell too much on the statistics, but I think it's giving us an idea of where we are at, where we have been in terms of how many people we lost to suicide, where we are at the moment. Have we made any difference in the last 10 years? The answer to that, looking at the data, is no. So what can we do next? You know, what can we do different? So that's a big question, the million-dollar question in terms of that. And we talk about the, we'll go on to talk about the training and what we have currently and everything at the moment to try you know, to address it. Because we all know, Fale, the complexity of suicide. We can, and a lot of people ask me, because once they know that I work, you know, in this area, they do ask, what's the reason for people taking their own lives? And I can't say, and I use my replies, I can't say one reason is the cause. There are a multitude of reasons for people reaching their point of taking their own lives. And so it's so complex. And also the other part to it, for one death, somebody who died to suicide, it affected at least 10 people or 60 people and more within our Pacifica community, as we know. So the ripple effect of one you know, one death to suicide will affect a lot of people. And those people, of course, if we don't have support for them, the risk increases as well, because we know. That's because I sit on another group, which is a child youth mortality review group, yes, where we look at young people died of suicide and other courses I attend when there is when they review and analyze the young people's loss to suicide. So the number of times they come up of when we look at the history of the person, how somebody in their family have lost to suicide in their history. So what it what it's telling us is that the risk of suicide, and research has showed it, of people who have experienced a close loved ones or close relative who lost to suicide, they have a risk. Unless it's provided support for them, there will be a increased risk of them going down that path as well. So that's the complexity of how suicide can affect. And of course, we're not talking about, we're talking about the other part of it is the self-harm. You know, people, for every suicide, there's so many people who harm themselves. I must stress that self-harm doesn't, not all self-harm leads to suicide, but self-harm is increased risk. We can look at self-harm, but also we can separate people who attempted suicide and survive. You know, those are at-risk people. So we have to look at the whole population. So this is into the complexity of the work in this space.
Yeah. Thank you, Manu. Yes, you touched about young people. Just before this morning, I was with a friend. We actually try to look after ourselves by going to the pool and just do some swimming and things like that. So while we were there, we just had some sharing. And she happened to say that a lot of young people that would be friends with her son, and they would come home. And she's a mother that liked to spend time with her children. And this one particular boy from neighborhood family, parents work, both parents at work, and that's why I like the importance of your sharing this morning about sacrificing time for children. And so this child was told not to go anywhere, to be at home alone and just wait for the parents, where the parents knew that this child is safe with the neighbor. Unfortunately, the child was quite upset at 17 years old, and so as you were training us to the language that we should be using, so he was lost to suicide. And very sad, and that's not long ago. Now I'd like to ask about the support, as you say, one that's lost to suicide and affects 10 other people, and this is young people. How do you then support young people, especially if they're still at school at this age?
And I guess from the ministry to the district health boards to the NGOs to other groups that are around our community, the question is how we can coordinate some kind of support. When in my role, we have a group, we have an advisory group where they advise and help in terms of forging and planning for our action plan for the district. We do also form an interagency group. Interagency group where we have membership from the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Vulnerable Children, which is Oranga Tamariki, used to be SIFS. Mm-hmm. In the past, we have the victim support, police, the Ministry of Education. They have a team, a specialized team that deal with focus on suicide of young people, suspected suicide within the school. It's called the Trauma Intervention Team, or Traumatic Incident Team. They go into the school and support the school. In the first instance, victim support, they support the family and the family and the father now in the same first incident. Now, it is all very well some of the support they are provided, but sometimes it's the long-term support. What happened when everything settled, you know, as we know, when we lose a loved one, all the families and our relatives come to the funeral, they come to support for a certain amount of time, and then when they leave, that's when the family would need support. And that's a big gap, a big, big gap in our supporting of people who have lost loved ones to suicide. And Dr. Jemima Tiedia has done quite a bit of research around not only the suicide amongst Samoa and Tongan, but she also did a research into the support or postvention support for families after suicide, which is a huge gap, as I mentioned. There's no support for Indigenous through her research. But anyway, she has developed a guideline out of the research she has done. She has done quite a few follow-up in down the country. She then developed a guideline that anybody in mainstream or anyone can use in terms of providing support for family or postvention support for the family. So that's something that we, from a district health board point of view in my role, we set so those interagency group in place where we said, and we work close with CASA. CASA is the clinical Aotearoa support agency, which they made the main focus is to address cluster of contagion. Because as we know, young people, when they use social media, which is another vehicle that, you know, it's a challenging part because they use social media a lot, and you know there's always a risk of other related young people when they have someone in their group lost to suicide. There's a huge risk that they affect. Kind of suicide can arise as a risk of that. So CASA usually come in and facilitate community meetings to look at the actions and support for that particular community. So that's quite good. But your question, coming back to your question, Father, I'm going round and round on a big circle coming to support our young people at school. I think it's, again, it's a complex issue in our support. We can start from home. You know, because recently, you know, statistics shows and reports shows that some of the underlying issues of when we look at a young person lost to suicide through our child youth mortality review group, quite a few of them are from a broken family. They come from a family of violence. There's drug and alcohol involved. So those are a social issue, and we do know from statistics that there is a high number or high rate of people died of suicide who are in the deprivation area.
Yeah.
You know, poverty, housing, unemployment, all of those other things that would just make it more complex in yes. terms of when you have those underlying issues, you can see why people reach that point. You know, so the question is, and it's going to be a take a collective effort to address it. And it's funny, the World Health Organization made a point when they released their global suicide prevention actions. He said it's important to note that suicide can be prevented.
Yes.
Suicide is preventable. Yes. So if we take that mindset, we'll try our uttermost to make sure that people don't lose anybody to suicide. Of course, some people might argue, if people want to do it, they will do it. But if we adopt that kind of mindset, then a lot of people, we might not care to intervene because we might think, you know, they're trying their hardest to do it and they will succeed. Of course, some will succeed, but we're taking an approach that everybody, we can prevent everybody's loss to suicide. So we can start from that starting point. Then we look at what kind of support that we can provide.
Thank you. I know you did mention about the agencies that are also providing support, namely LIVA,
yes,
with their Flow Talanoa,
yeah,
and also the training that you mentioned earlier about the Safe Talk and Suicide to Hope as well. So
yes.
There is a lot that you have updated us this morning.
Yes.
And because of the the depth and, you know, the interesting topic with regards to loss to suicide.
Mm.
It's a very gentle way of, you know, educating and training our families, our communities, even our school.
That's right.
And we need to have you back probably on a more regular base to continue this. Some people are not able to have the opportunity to attend some of these community meetings that we do this, or even to some organizations when they run their training and meetings like this. So most of them are at home tuning in to hearing these very important issues and topics. And while we at it, would you be able to give contact details where they can contact you or
will
you?
Yes, it, thank you, Fale. It is important, and because we look at, in terms of suicide prevention, there's a prevention part, so we have a lot of bit of training and how to recognize people who are in distress and where to take them for help. So there's a prevention. The intervention part is, you know, when the in the agencies come in and really help a school and other people to go through the you know the distress time, and the postvention part is the supporting, as I mentioned, of people who are left behind, you know, the family. That the prevention is one, and you mentioned a couple of training days. Lifeline is to run the safe talk and assist, and unfortunately they are not no longer funding that, but they're still a person to that I work close with, Caroline Wilson. They have one degree which they run those workshops, but at a cost. And we still promote it out to our community through emails and whatever not. The other part is LeVar. You mentioned LeVar. They have a free training that's funded by the ministry. It's called Life Keepers, and people can access that through internet, and they can book through that. They also have the Flow Talanoa, but the contact for LeVar, if you can go on their either on their website or ring them, their number is it's 09, which is Auckland number, 261-3490. So that's 261-3490. Or you can go on their website, www.levar.co.nz. There's a lot of materials in there. And the other part, there is a new phone numbers that we promote. There are a whole lot of other numbers, but if I can give you just one, this number, it's 1737. This is a free call or text. Just text 1737 anytime, either text or call. You'll have, it's a 24-hour support line. And what they do is one hub where they have a qualified person, a counselor, who can address it. So 1737 is not only for suicide prevention, but there are other, you know, smoke-free family violence. You got this one hub of a support line. So 1737 is important to note. So I think those are kind of just areas that I know that might be relevant for our community at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There are a whole lot of other numbers, but I think those things we have time to go into that. But those are the three kind of areas that I want to mention in terms of training and getting our people to access some of the information.
Thank you so very much. There is so much more that our guest is wanting to get out, but because of our time, you don't believe that we've been here for a whole hour, and we're coming towards the end of our program. And we have been listening to Manu Fotu, Suicide Prevention Program Manager for both Waitemata and Auckland District Health Board. So Manu, for the last 4 minutes is left for you. I know there's so many important messages that to be given out. Just your time now is to, what would you like your listeners to take away with them from this presentation?
I know that we talk about a lot about people that we lost to suicide statistics and the training and all that. But one thing that I always wanted to remind our listeners is about looking at how we can build resilience for our family. Mm. And that's about holding our family values, you know, the holistic way that we bring up families are not just the physical, not just the mental health, mm. but our spiritual. Spiritual is important for our families, of course. So it's about building resilience for our kids, you know, having the conversation yeah. with them, open talanoa with for young people, sit around the table, we have meals, talk about the, you know, how's your day going, you know, those kind of little things that we allow us to build them up, because one, you know, a lot of times they have to make choices, you know, our children, and it's, they're still developing. It's not until they're 24, 25, I always believe, then we that they are mature enough to make good choices. But while they're still young and coming up, important to have a safety home environment and allow them to have a conversation, tell you what's in their heart, or, you know, what's going on for them, so we can allow some dialogue and assist us. So building resilience.